Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peach State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peach State Pandemonium.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Peach State Pandemonium. We've been gone so long, Jerry, they forgot our names. They don't even have our names on the introductions anymore.
I'm sure you've forgotten mine by now.
No, I would never forget your name. But we have been gone for 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago was due to technical difficulties on my part, and then for the last 2 weeks I've been, well, I was traveling week before last. And then last week, of course, being Thanksgiving, we took off. So, but we are back, or at least two of us are back. Our colleague Bobby Simmons is helping coach the Falcons from his seat at the Georgia Dome. So,
I hope he don't get his feelings hurt tonight.
I hope he does.
He might. I caught the tail end of the news or something about him egging the Saints or something. Did you hear about that?
No.
They could have extra escorts to the airport tonight for them and everything. I didn't get the full drift of it, but you know, of course. I mean,
where do the Falcons fans think they are, in Philadelphia?
Exactly. Or Oakland, throwing batteries.
Wow. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. But I have to pull for the Saints. The Falcons are going to the playoffs regardless. I mean, they're what, 12-1, 14-1, something like that.
11-1, whatever they are.
Something like that. So I mean, they've. I guess the only thing they're playing for now is home field advantage, but.
But they can implode. Don't think they can.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They all can. They all can. But I just hope Alabama gets past Georgia next week or whenever they play.
They play on Saturday. I'm sure they will. Only chance Georgia has that they play, you know, they can't make any mistakes, none. I mean, not one, but, you know, that's not going to happen, so.
Yeah. Well, I sat here and watched the Auburn game, and, was, you know, they started off with those three penalties, and I thought, well, Alabama's going to mess around here and blow this, and then they blew it, all right.
They fired cheesy before sunrise, I think. Sunday.
Oh man, that was an interesting game.
I'm telling you.
Did Auburn even score a first down?
I don't know. I kind of quit watching it. I'd watch another game. That's so boring. You knew what was going to happen. I don't know if it crossed 50 or not. I don't even know that.
Well, tell us how you're doing.
I'm doing well.
Your surgery.
Yeah, I'm really doing well. I'm pain free now. Still learning to walk a little bit. Just have a little, you know, of course, discomfort. But as far as the pain, that's past me. And working them real hard. You know, getting the, you know, being able to bend them and flex them and all that. That's the toughest part. But
yeah,
I'm working on it hard. And it's, you know, it's got a lot of scar tissue in there because so much stuff is moved around in your knee. Everything's just pulled to the side to get to what they have to do. And it was more than I bargained for, but I'm glad it's over.
I bet you are. Oh, are you having to walk with a walker or something?
No. I went back 2 weeks after I had my surgery. Of course, my wife took me, you know, to the doctor, and as soon as I got there, they took me and x-rayed me, and he comes in. He said, everything's perfect. Everything's where it's supposed to be. Everything's lined up. And he said, whose walker is that? I said, that's mine. He said, put it down. You don't need it. But I still use it some, but I guess I hadn't walked on that in a couple of weeks.
Well, good. Good. So when are you going back to work?
I go back to him a week from tomorrow, and I think he's going to turn me loose. I mean, I can do what I need to do, you know, if I get in a jam. The guys down there would help me, so I think I'll be all right. And I'm ready, too. I mean,
I bet
I am.
Kathy's probably ready for you to go, too.
She's probably already talked to the doctor. Tell him he can go now.
That's right.
Let me tell you something. That girl, I've been blessed by her. It's
that's good.
Been tough on her. She's taking great care of her.
Because it's like most men, I'm sure you've been a big baby.
Oh, God. I would get her on the phone, but I don't think everybody needs to hear all that. But she's been some kind of good to me, so.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, tell her she has mine and Bobby's sympathy.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Tell her bonus check's on the way.
Bonus check's on the way, Kathy. Your bonus check's on the way. She'll be looking for it like the rest of us, right?
Yeah, exactly. She might as well wait on a payoff like the rest of us.
Just wait till next week, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I know you got some bad news for us.
Yeah, I do. It just—I tell you, it's one a month is what it's been for the last 3 or 4 months, and it's
dwindling down, bud.
Yep. But for those that don't know, Dale Hay, otherwise known as Buddy Roberts, passed away Monday, and I have not seen any. Anything details as far, but I would imagine, I know he's been battling throat cancer for many, many years, and I would imagine that was the cause of his death, but I got to see him, never worked with Buddy, but I got to see him 2 years ago at the Mobile reunion. He came, Michael Hayes actually flew him in from Chicago and brought him, and everything, but you worked with him, didn't you?
Ted and I worked with him and the Freebirds. I can't tell you how many times. And
did you ever work with he and Jerry Brown?
Never did. No, never did. I think Ted did. I think they worked for Gunkel.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, I think Ted did, and I never did work with Jerry Brown. But you know, not because of his passing, but I'm gonna tell you, he was the best worker of the bunch.
Oh,
I know
yeah.
Gordy. I know Gordy was. Everybody raved about Gordy, you know, and he was. You know, he was a big guy and all. But let me tell you, he was the heart of that team, Buddy Roberts.
Oh, absolutely.
And you
mean,
know,
he was the one that. You know,
it
takes somebody that's talented that can, you know, do the job and then still keep their heat and still, you know, maintain, you know, the level of heat that they started out with even before losing, and that was what his role was.
Well, his you know, he wasn't the biggest guy out there, but you never considered his size.
No,
because of his, you know, he was thick, and you know, he looked the part. You never considered his height or size or anything. He worked so hard, and he was always right there, and he was. I have nothing but great things to say about him. When he crawled through those ropes, he was strictly business, and you know, that's all I knew about him was from when I would get in the ring with him. Other than that, outside the ring, nothing. But I'm telling you, he was an asset to what we did. He really was.
Yeah, well, and a lot of people don't realize how far back his career went and all the different phases. Of course, he was from Vancouver originally. Started working in the AWA in the late 60s, I think, mid to late 60s, under the name of Buddy Smith, just doing jobs on TV. And how he wound up as part of the Hollywood Blondes was actually a strange twist of fate. The Hollywood Blondes were supposed to be Jerry Brown and Dandy Jack Donovan. They were already starting to team out in Oklahoma, and they had Jack's wife, then wife, Vern Bottoms, was their manager. Well, Jack had quite a bit of success with Buddy Colt when Buddy Colt was Handsome Ron Reed, teaming out in that territory is, with Vern as their manager. And so just before they were really start to launch, you know, their big push is the Blondes, Dandy Jack broke his leg. So they had to find a replacement real quick, and Vern Gagne, who had a piece of the Oklahoma territory at one time, recommended Dale Hay. He came in as Dale Roberts. From Oklahoma, they went to Montreal Grand Prix, working for the Vachons, and that's where they met Brett Suttons, who became Oliver Humperdinck, as their manager, and then that's really when they took off. They went from there to Florida, had big runs in Florida, worked for Gunkel and Gunkel and also worked out in Los Angeles, California, worked in the Carolinas, worked all over the place. And then, of course, after they split up, a lot of people forget that Buddy went out to work for Blanchard in San Antonio, and he was using the name Dale Valentine. He was supposed to be Johnny Valentine's younger brother, and Johnny was out there managing. And he did that for 6 months to a year, and then he kind of faded away a little bit, and then the next thing you know, Bill Watts brought him in because Bill Watts was familiar with him, of course, from his time in Oklahoma, knew what a good worker he was, and put him with Michael Hayes and Terry Gordy, who were green as grass at that time, to kind of balance them out, and legend went from there.
What happened with him and Brown? What was there?
I don't know why they split. I never have heard. But Jerry, the last run of the Hollywood Blondes had was actually working in Nashville for Gullis, but he had, it wasn't he and Buddy, it was Buddy's younger brother, Laurie Hay, who worked, wrestled under the name of Sonny Rogers.
I knew him.
They were working out there, but he wasn't called Sonny Rogers, he was called something else.
The last I saw of him was in when I was in Louisiana. I never saw him after that. What happened to him? I don't know.
I don't think he stayed in the business all that long. He was in here, or he was in Mobile for quite a few months in 76, but never got much past mid-card. And he just kind of bounced around, and I think that run with Jerry Brown was about the last thing he did. He got out of the business. I would say his career lasted less than 10 years.
Yeah.
But he was a decent worker, too.
Yeah, he wasn't bad. He wasn't bad. He wasn't his brother, of course, but
no,
he wasn't bad.
But anyway, I'm hoping maybe our guest tonight, Bo James, may have more details as far as Buddy's passing, because he actually called me last night and asked me if I knew about it, and I didn't, and he was trying to get a hold of Tom Pritchard because Tom had heard about it, and Tom was reaching out to Michael Hayes to see, because if anybody knew about it, it would be Michael, because I think Michael kept in touch with Buddy on a fairly frequent basis. So we'll see what Bo knows when we get him on the air. Dutch Mantel was supposed to be with us tonight, but he had to cancel out at the last minute because of some unseen circumstances. He did send his apologies and definitely wants to do the show with us in the future. And today is Dutch's birthday, so happy birthday to him.
Yep.
And it's Jerry Lawler's birthday, so happy birthday to Jerry Lawler. So, but I'm going to do a quick commercial break, and when we get back, we'll get Bo James on the line with us and see what he's got going on. So bear with us, and we'll take a quick break.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Soley? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? That happened in Columbus on my birthday. Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Sleigh bells ring, are you listening? In the lane, snow's glistening. A beautiful sight, oh, we're happy tonight. Walking in a winter wonderland. Gone away is a bluebird. Yeah.
Well, that's nice. I've added Christmas music.
Yeah, I thought I was on another station there. I thought Mike's going to change channels.
No, not quite. I'd be playing circus music.
Yeah, I love that circus music, brother.
I miss it already.
I bet you do. I know I would.
I'm ready to go back on the road. Oh, man. Well, I'm going to dial up Bo here real quick and I'll get him to tell you his schedule for this weekend. It'll bring back some memory for you.
I bet.
Hello?
Is this the Kingsport, Tennessee post office?
Well, this would be Fall Branch. I'm 10 miles outside of Kingsport.
Oh, You're not in the big city of Kingsport.
No.
I was telling Jerry. Tell Jerry what your schedule is this weekend, Bo.
Friday night, I'm in Tullahoma, Tennessee. Saturday afternoon, I will be in Atlanta for Bobby's little reunion. Saturday night, I'll be in Blue Ridge, Georgia. Sunday afternoon, 3 o'clock, I'll be in Asheville, North Carolina. Sunday night at 6 o'clock, I'll be in Knoxville, right outside of Knoxville, Maryville, Tennessee.
So you know that when you got a jet, man. Ain't nothing wrong with that.
I don't know about a jet.
When I had bookings like that, I had to drive them.
Well, I'm right there. I got a little Suzuki Forenza with 258,000 miles on it.
Well, more power to you, man.
I've got
to get something off my chest. It makes you kind of glad that you're not in the business anymore. I saw on the internet where somebody's going to have a thing for Brad Armstrong, like some kind of like a tag, title match in honor of Brad Armstrong. I've got a problem with that, guys. If he was going to do that, why didn't you do it when he's still alive?
That would
be like having a tag team, Ted and I getting killed in a plane crash now. And wherever we went in our careers, we was always tag team champions, overseas, no matter where we went together. And so we get killed in a plane. And 2 weeks later, we're going to have a tag team tournament honoring those brothers. Well, why didn't you have the tournament while we were still alive and be there? I just got a problem drawing money off of tragedies. I mean, maybe I'm too old school, or I got a problem with that. I don't know what y'all think about it, but I think it sucks.
I hadn't heard about it.
I have.
You know anything
about
that, Bo? Sucks. Yeah, they're quick to jump on anything that they think. And you probably the guy who's probably running it probably never knew Brad in his life.
That's probably. I said, thank you, sir. Probably was never in the town for the guy. If you have to stoop to that, I'm sorry. I mean, that's Jerry Oates' feelings. I don't know what anybody else feels about it, but I know if that happened to me, I wouldn't appreciate somebody doing that to me or my brother. I mean, if we meant that much to you, why didn't you bring us when we were still alive and we're going to honor y'all by having a tournament honoring y'all, you know? That's my thing.
Exactly.
And I know that we didn't need to get into that, but I just had to vent that. I just think it. I don't care who does it. I've seen it done, and it sucks.
Yes, it does.
I know when I was promoting there in Columbus, somebody said, "Why don't you have a Fred Ward memorial?" And he'd been dead, I don't know, God, 10 years. So and his wife was gone, Ms. Ward, and I knew them from the time I was a child. And I grew up there, and they knew my whole family and everything. And I called his daughter, Rose, and I said, "Rose, I said, what do you think about us doing that, honoring your dad?" She thought it was the greatest thing in the world. She was there. Her husband, who booked for him, was there. We had Bob Armstrong, guys that had worked for him. Les was there. I forget who all, the superstar. We just had a lot of guys that had worked for him. I think, Ole was there that night honoring him. But I got permission to do that.
I did the Mark Curtis Memorial. I did it for 5 years with his wife, and we'd give all the money we made every year off of it to the Children's Hospital here in Kingsport.
You probably had permission to use his name, right?
Yeah, his wife was right there ringside every year when we did it for him. It was her idea to do it.
I'm not saying they didn't, but this is just too soon.
Yeah.
I just have a problem with it, you know? I mean,
there was a guy that he worked around Knoxville here for, gosh, I've known him for over 20 years, Terry Wright. He passed away Monday, and 2 hours after he passed away, I saw on the Facebook, "Hey, we're going to put together a memorial for him next Thursday. Who wants to be on it?"
And, see there? Have you talked to his family? I mean, that's quick, isn't it? I mean, I don't know. I shake my head. I just shake my head. I just go ahead and tell you. I don't know if y'all knew this or not. I mean, I don't know.
No, I didn't know anything about it.
Oh,
I hadn't heard about it either.
I don't know if either one of you ever went to Japan for Baba, but this was told to me by the Japanese people in the office. When David died, did you know that his daddy wouldn't come get the body?
No.
The Japanese wanted Fritz to come to Japan to get the body. He refused. Joe Higuchi escorted David Von Erich's dead body back to Dallas from Tokyo.
Yeah,
and then
I
what do they do? Have a David Von Erich memorial. Called money.
Exactly.
I can go one. They did a Hall of Fame card in West Virginia last year, and none of the people that they put in the Hall of Fame was there. None of them were there.
Stop it, man! You're killing me. I got bad news for you. You're killing me. I'm sitting here working on my knees. Do you think there's something wrong with that, or is it just me?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot wrong with it.
Yeah, definitely. Unless, the thing that Bo and I are involved in February, the Ted Allen thing, but that whole thing.
It's a totally different ball game.
Exactly.
That was
something started
game.
By Terry Lawler and Kyle Matthews and
well, I'm sure they had permission from his mother.
Oh, absolutely. In fact, the family is there. And the thing is, the people that are involved in this are people that knew Ted, were close to Ted, worked with Ted, were trained by Ted. Ted Ted was like the Mississippi River. He touched a lot of different people.
Yes,
and so
did.
Everybody that's involved in this was actually, you know, Ted Allen was a part of their life. It's not like somebody, you know, saying, okay, well, so-and-so died. Let's just, let's call this a memorial card and
right.
draw people to it. You know, I don't know.
But I just didn't know how y'all felt about stuff like that.
No, it's their cheap way. And I told my wife that she asked about this. She said, "Why do they do that?" I said, "Because they know it will draw people, and it's their chance to wrestle in front of people."
And it's cheesy.
That's why they're
cheesy as it gets. I mean, that shouldn't even be done this soon.
No, And like I said, I would probably imagine the people didn't even know Brad.
I mean, really now? I mean, come on, you're right. I mean, you know, that old saying, out of sight, out of mind, brother. Oh, yeah. I mean, that's enough of that. I just had to say that. I just thought it was, I probably rubbed a hole in my knee talking about this. And I got a thing to massage him with. Have to go and have surgery tomorrow again.
You got smoke coming from his
toes. But anyhow, that's enough of that. I just had to get that off my chest. So how you been, Bob?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing well, thank you.
I had a friend of mine. He had the same operation that you had, but he had them a year apart. And I asked him a couple of weeks ago if he would. Did both of them at the same time. He said, anybody that would do that is absolutely out of their mind.
Well, you're talking to a moron then.
Oh.
But I will say this. I'm not the only guy in the business. I've had tons of surgeries. I've had 5 knee surgeries, elbow. But this was more than I bargained for, man. It was the most painful. It was around the clock. I told my wife, I told her, a week to 10 days and I'll be home free. It was a month. It's been a little over a month. It actually stopped hurting me about 4 days ago, the pain. It was night and day. I mean, you got no idea. But I'm glad I did both of them at the same time. I've heard a lot of people had one done and said, that's it, brother, I ain't going back.
I said, if you wouldn't have gone back if you'd only had one done.
Oh, that's, I mean, I've heard people, I know, in fact, I know a guy that owns a radio station here who used to have Sputnik and them do interviews at his station. I saw him on the beach the week before I had it done. He said, you better be glad you're getting both of them. He said, I had one done. He said, I'll never go back.
Yeah, it took him a year to go back for the second one, and that's what he was debating that. He said, but now he's glad that he did do it because he said the pain is gone. He said he walks, and I tell him, I said, you're a walking miracle every time I see you because he was on crutches for so long and just before he had the surgeries, and now he just walks normal. And,
well, I'm having by doing both of them at the same time, I've had to learn how to walk again. I mean, I still walk a little funny, but I think I was in pain for 10 years before I had this done. I mean, night and day. And I might have waited too long, longer than I should have, you know. But that pain every day, and now I have no pain. You know, I have discomfort. I don't get the swelling like a lot of people do. I've been blessed with that. There was 2 things I was worried about when I had this done. Was blood clots and infection. And I had neither of the two. And I was blessed. I'm talking about blessed. And they're healing up good. And yeah, but it's something to think about. Because I told the girls, I go to therapy again tomorrow, and I told them, I said, nobody pre-warned me about what this was going to be like. I mean, nobody. The pain. But it's gone, thank God. And Bobby Simmons will be in pain tonight when he sinks beat these Falcons. I bet he's got a dozen. Did you hear about that, Bo, about the people in Atlanta egging the Saints? I don't know.
No.
I told Mike before we went on there, I heard on the news that they're going to have extra protection for them going to the airport tonight when leaving the stadium. I don't know what they did. Bobby might have headed the whole thing up. I don't know.
If my beloved Tennessee Titans don't turn around, I'm going to be the first one in Nashville throwing eggs at them.
They show Bobby a dozen eggs, I'm done. Yeah, I hate that about the Titans, man. I was always a Titan fan. I just hate they got rid of Jeff Fisher.
Oh, me too. I loved him. He should still be there. Munchak is a great coordinator, but he's not a head coach. He is not a head coach.
Well, you know, he lost his job over Vince Young.
Yeah.
And where is Vince Young today?
Yeah, exactly. You know,
so,
and
I
was an older fan all the way back to Earl Campbell and White Shoes Johnson and Bum Phillips. So when they moved here,
I loved all that, man.
Yeah. So when they moved to Nashville, I was the happiest man you ever seen. You know, we usually go once or twice a year, and I told Misty, I said, if they lose this week, we'll go the rest of the game because we'll be able to buy tickets for about $10.
There you go. That's the way to say it. Well, maybe they get turned around. I don't know.
No, I question a lot of the decisions that Bud Adams makes, and I saw him in an interview back in the off season where he said he was 88 or whatever he is, and he said, I'm not thinking about future, I'm thinking about now. He wants that Super Bowl before he dies.
Well, he don't have the pieces now, I'm sorry.
No, he sure doesn't. And Sunday was evident of that. Jacksonville. How do you get whipped by Jacksonville?
Boy, you talking about a cutthroat business that is.
Well, I cannot imagine it. I'm just worried Alabama's going to win. You know, they're going to beat Georgia, then they're going to play Notre Dame, beat Notre Dame, and then all that go through all that, and they're still going to make Florida the national champions just because. That would make certain members of my family happy, but it would not make me happy.
Well, I tell you what, this has been the craziest football season, pro and college, I've seen.
Yeah, and both Tennessee teams absolutely suck. I've never seen the Volunteers this bad or my Titans this bad.
Did they run Dooley off?
Vanderbilt. They fired him the second he came off the field after Vanderbilt beat him by 30 points.
I tell you what, you know, it's like Lane Kiffin was there 1 year and did that university like that. I can't believe somebody will actually hire him.
Yeah. If there was ever needed to be somebody to be blackballed, he was a guy that should have been blackballed.
And it looks like to me contracts don't mean anything, right?
Nothing.
They don't mean nothing.
They're getting ready to hit Tennessee with two more charges that from where he was here recruiting, something that he did. And they're still paying for – no, they're still paying for whatever he did in that one season that he was here.
Yeah, that's not fair.
No. I tell everybody, I wish we had another Johnny Majors. When Johnny Majors was here, there was no UT football players getting arrested for robbing stores or breaking in homes or all this other stuff that goes on.
Sounds like the University of Georgia players.
Or a certain Heisman Trophy winner from Auburn, his initials were Cam Newton.
You imagine being a coach and you're making these millions of dollars a year, and your livelihood depends on these guys.
Tennessee's trying to get John Gruden, and they said the thing they said Monday on the news was it's not a money issue, but he also wants to be assistant athletic director because that was the first thing he said he wanted to do was clean up their recruiting and everything else they've got in trouble for, and they don't want to give him that power. I said, give it to him. He's a Johnny Majors. He coached under Majors for 3 years. He was here 86 to 89.
Did you know he's a genius?
Oh, yeah. And you imagine him recruiting. He shows up to your house and says, you want to play for the man that won the Super Bowl.
That's right.
you're going to go.
Is there a chance, though, Bo?
Well, if they'll give him the power that he wants, and that's what I'm screaming, give it to him. Because he'll clean it up.
What do you got now? What do you have now?
Yeah, they've got nothing. I sit here Saturday, and for the first time in my life that I can remember, seeing empty seats everywhere in Knoxville on TV.
That's unheard of, isn't it?
Yeah, they used to be a waiting list to get in there. You had to inherit those season tickets to get in there.
That seat's about 100 and something, doesn't it?
104,000.
104,000.
You know, they still had about 65 to 75 in there, but, you know, when you drew consecutive sellouts for decades, people just don't care to come. And it's not fair weather fans, it's people, their feelings are hurt.
I know. I mean, I can imagine. It's just, I don't know. These powers to be, I don't know what they're thinking. But if Gruden went there, they'd have to turn loose some scratch, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Yep. His wife is from Knoxville, too, and her family's here. So, I mean, that's another big plus. I'm just hoping that they give him the power, let him clean it up, and let him do what he does best, and that's coach.
He can flat do that now.
As long as Alabama gives Nick Saban an eternal contract, that's all I'm interested.
Well, I'm sure he's got that.
I hope so. I don't know. I've done some dumb things before as far as their coaches go.
I always respected Bear Bryant, but I have always hated the Alabama Crimson Tide. They have been public enemy number one to anybody that lives here in East Tennessee for eternity, it seems like.
Well, they're something. I guess Saban is that good, I guess. I'm not a fan of his at all, what he did when he was down there with the Dolphins. He left in like the middle of the night, you know.
Yeah.
There's no loyalty to anybody in college or pro sports now. You look at it, I mean, it used to be that's our team, and hopefully next year. But now you know, well, next year it's going to be a whole new crew of people on the field.
But how much of that, Bo, is the owners? You know, it's just like with the New York Yankees. You know, and Steinbrenner, as long as he owns them, you know, if they don't go to the World Series, he'll fire whoever the manager is, and you know, half the team, even though he's got the best team money can buy, and always has had. But you know, some things just don't go your way. That's why I love to see, you know, when the Braves finally started winning. Of course, then they became a dynasty and pumped all the money into them, and they were buying high talent, but I remember when they were buying high talent, but it was already used up when they were buying. Like Bruce Sutter.
Yeah, and you can remember when they had a talented team with Bob Horner, Dale Murphy, and Glenn Hubbard, and they couldn't win a game.
Well,
there you go.
My thing is, you know, they won the World Series with a catcher that they traded a bag full of equipment for. And that's a true story. The guy that they had playing catcher, his name has totally slipped my mind, but they actually traded him. He was a minor league player, and they traded him for some equipment, or traded some equipment to get him. And he was the heart of that team that year because he was just, you know, he was an old style baseball player.
And there's not many of those left.
What's wrong with a lot of these teams? Not a lot of them. I'm talking about the pros. Like Jerry Jones is too hands-on. You know, you own them. We all know you own them. You know, you never played pro football. You know.
Yeah. What is their qualifications? They have none.
That's what I'm trying to. I mean, I saw the thing on Jimmy Johnson. I don't know if y'all saw it. There's the life in full pro football, and they were talking to him. He said when he was there coaching them, of course, he turned them around, and you know what they did. He said in one day, Jerry Jones made $10 million, but nobody knew that. You know, the world didn't know that. but they knew he owned the Cowboys. That meant more to him, what he was saying, and he said the stage wasn't big enough for both of us.
Yeah.
Jimmy Johnson was getting all the credit.
All.
You know, he was getting all the credit. Hey, I own them. Yeah, but you're not coaching them. You know, that wasn't good enough for him. So,
yeah,
it's called egos, guys, you know.
Maybe all of us could get hired as a coaching staff somewhere, and we just had 1 year we could retire.
I'd be glad to help them out. It's not a 16 games. I mean, come on.
No, I'm afraid I don't want to be involved in that.
No.
Well,
yeah, it could be worse, Michael. You could be wrestling.
That's true. But it's all about money now. That's, you know.
Everything is, yeah. Everything. Yep.
Well, speaking of money, Mr. James has a new project he's about to unleash on the world here in a couple of weeks, just in time for Christmas. So, everybody listening, get your pencils and paper out. Bo's going to tell us about the perfect Christmas gift for the wrestling fan on in your family and on your Christmas list. So tell us about it, Bo. What you got coming up?
Well, I got my second book getting ready to come out. It's getting ready to go to print here just in a few days. It's called It Takes All Kinds, The People, Places, and Events That Make Up Pro Wrestling. You know, my first book was a little bit of a autobiography, and it was a little bit of history lesson on East Tennessee and just my 24 years in wrestling. But this book is just, it's several short stories put together of just events and people that I've come across in the quarter century of traveling the roads and wrestling in different towns every day. And you all know it truly takes all kinds to make up this profession. From the extremely brilliant to the criminally insane, we have come across all of them.
That pretty well sums it up.
No, it's just, it's like my pastor, Donnie Brannon, he edited my first book, and he's editing this book, and he continuously tells me, these are stories that Hollywood writers could not make up. I said, no, because they really happened. not everybody's been, tackled by cops for, child abuse to come to find out you're just slapping a drunk midget around.
It took all kinds.
If
it didn't take all of them, it was full of them anyway.
yes. And let me tell you, I mean, nowadays it's even worse because anybody can get in. And I sit and look at these guys every week, different states, different towns, and just think, my God, how are they even allowed in the dressing room? In the closing of the book, I go through just a mixture of what I have come across, and I say the thing that is missing the most from professional wrestling is professional wrestlers.
Thank you.
There's very few of them left.
That is a fact.
There's a lot of them that like to say they are, but they have, just like those owners that are coaching, they have no qualifications.
How many guys have you asked, how long have you been wrestling? They'll tell you 6 years. They've had four.
Oh, yeah.
6 years.
Yeah, that's why I just had that discussion. My buddy Nick Paradise is down from New York visiting. He's going to make the loop with us this weekend. And he was telling me about a guy, we were talking about a guy from New York who has been wrestling since 1994. And he's just now hit 500 matches. So that's almost, that's 18 years. So I wouldn't even call it a hobby if that's, because that's not even once a week. At least if you have a good hobby, you do that.
We almost did that much in Kansas City in a year, had that many matches.
Yeah. I mean, it's changing. And I'm so glad that I got to be a part of it and come in on the, I was in on the tail end, but I was there. I was still in the, when they were still wrestling every day and still making Memphis and Louisville and Evansville and Nashville. And you couldn't even get guys to make those towns now. Most of them don't leave more than 40 miles from the house. So they're afraid that they can't do what they want to do. Somebody's going to tell them what to do, and they don't want to hear that.
No, it's sad. It's how this can be a business can be done like this. I mean, it's just been raped and mauled and everything else.
Yeah, it's nothing left. I mean, it's there's no semblance of what I found. Nick brought me some DVDs. I was sitting here watching Ken Lucas and Jimmy Golden a few minutes ago. And it's better than anything I've seen on TV in 20 years, but you couldn't get anybody that's in the ring now to sit down and watch it because they're not turning a flip or diving out on the floor or doing the 450 splash.
But I've never seen, I mean, I don't even understand about what has been done to it, how New York even can draw a dime after what they've done to it. Unless these people are absolutely starved to death for something to do. I don't get it.
Well,
I think they've re-educated the fans. I mean, the people that watch the current product have no clue and don't want to know anything older than Stone Cold and The Rock. And even those are old-timers to them.
Well, yeah. To them, it's the wrestling fans. The wrestling business ran the wrestling fans off. You know, I mean, we do our Hall of Fame show here every July, and I had Garvin here this year and Candy Devine. There was people at the matches I have not seen in years, but they still remember what it was when they were kids. They still want a piece of it. They still bring their kids and grandkids to see that. When Ronnie Garvin threw that right hand, they blew the roof off the building, and because it was something special, you know. Now they throw 25 punches in the first 30 seconds of the match.
I know. It's something else.
And they don't sell any of
them. I don't watch it, so I don't know.
I don't either.
Well, a perfect example, somebody had posted on Facebook about Buddy Roberts dying, and somebody that responded to him was, "Who was that?" And he said, you know, he was part of the Freebirds, and whoever was said, "Would I know who they are? Give me a break." I mean, the Freebirds are not, you know, we're not talking about Buddy Rogers and Pat O'Connor here. We're talking
about
the
Freebirds.
They
need to go drink some antifreeze.
Yeah. You know, here's the thing about my first book and my second book here, too. I still, and even doing these shows, I mean, we're talking to the boys here, and most of the people listening are the boys, but it's still hard to be open about our business.
Yes.
Because I can remember 15 years old in the dressing room in Knoxville, Tennessee, Rick Connors said, "Look, what goes on in here stays in here. You tell anybody, they're going to find you floating in a river in a couple of days."
That's the way it still should be.
You know, and I still look for a few people to show up floating in the rivers. But, I mean, I got involved in wrestling in 1988. It was more open then than when you guys started, but it was still a closed society. And now it's open for everybody.
Well, how are you doing with your promotions? I mean, I don't understand how you can still.
Well, we're not. I mean, you know, in the late 90s, mid to late 90s, I could run anywhere from 8 to 15, 16 towns a month. You know, now we're down to one or two towns a month because there's so many little wrestling shows around here. But we've been running so long, we've got a pretty good little following that's established, and they know what they come to see. When they see Southern States Wrestling, they know, hey, that's different than everything else around here. Because
show a month?
Yeah, we're down to about a show a month. The rest of the time I stay booked out on the road somewhere. You know, it's not anything like it used to be. I mean, even a couple of years ago, we were still running, you know, a few times a month. But, I mean, there's nobody.
That's really sad.
There's nobody to keep anybody. As long as you can go on the internet and buy a wrestling ring, people are going to keep popping up with these little shows everywhere. And they're going to buy a ring and start promoting, and them and their buddies are going to wrestle, and then they have no clue what they're doing. They're going to get their buddies involved, and then they're going to have a fight, and then they're going to split off, and half of them's going to go buy their own ring, and then it's going to repeat until you're oversaturated. I mean, you take anything east of the Mississippi, any state east of the Mississippi, there's at least anywhere from 75 plus promotions in every state.
That's hard to believe.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. I counted up from where I'm at in Kingsport to Chattanooga that I know of, I counted up a couple of months ago almost 70 rings. When I first started in 88, there was 3 rings in East Tennessee. That was it. Now everybody's got one.
It's unbelievable. So where do you run one place steady?
Yeah, we run the Armed Forces Center right outside of Kingsport. It's a brand new federal armory they built, opened up last year. And we just ran there Thanksgiving, we'll run there Christmas night. We still do the Christmas night wrestling. There's not many people left to do that anywhere.
No.
You know, you ask guys, hey, I'll work on a holiday. You're crazy.
Man, here in Georgia, man, when we was in Georgia, we'd be in Columbus on Christmas Day
at
3 o'clock, and then we'd be in Atlanta that night.
Yeah.
Both places sold out.
Yeah.
We did that Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving was a tradition in Atlanta.
Yeah. They used to do the same thing here on Christmas. They do Johnson City in the afternoon, Knoxville at night. You know, and it's just, but I mean, it's the all kinds of people that we've known, like I talk about in the book, there's very few of them left.
But nobody can run the big cities like Knoxville or Chattanooga or anything, can
they? There's probably 7 or 8 promotions in Knoxville alone. But
oh,
they all just run. No, I'm telling you. But they all run just one neighborhood. Like you got one in East Knoxville. You got one in South Knoxville. You got one in North Knoxville. They just run neighborhoods.
That's like Mexico City.
Yeah.
They had like 50 promotions in Mexico City.
But about 10th the size, you know, and it's the same thing. You go to North Carolina, there's probably 150 little wrestling promotions in North Carolina.
I think there's a lot here in Georgia.
Yeah. Well, Chatsworth and Dalton area, they have about 5 shows every Friday and Saturday night, Chatsworth and Dalton.
Really?
And none of them draw. And it's just, it's more of a social gathering than it is a business.
Right, right. It's not a business.
No.
You're right. Exactly.
When we all started, it was grown men and women trying to further their lives, feed their families, and take care of their bills.
Well, that's what I did. That's how I made my living. And to see what's happened to it, it just breaks your heart. I mean, really. I mean, it does mine anyhow. You know, a lot of people don't care, but. And I paid the price for doing it. I mean, I just had 2 knees replaced, you know. I paid the price just like everybody else, you know. We pay the price for what we did. And to see what's happened to it, that just adds more fuel to the fire.
Yeah, and it's just, it's, you know, I mean, I said in the book, you know, I said they have robbed, raped, pillaged, and left my business for dead. I said, but I have my memories, and no man can take them from me.
No, that's a fact.
You know, and I mean, you think about all the people that we've known that is not here with us anymore. That's why I tell them. I said my dead friends and heroes roll over in the grave every time you guys get in the ring.
Yep.
And they just think it's a joke, you know. And I think about some of them. I wish they were here just to. See how long these guys would last with them for about 2 minutes. And, you know, it's definitely, like I said, my books, writing these books, it's probably saved me $100,000 in therapy.
I'm sure. If you let it. Since you're still in it, I know it does.
Yeah, I mean, it's... You know, Tom Pritchard called me a few weeks ago, and he's like, "Are you wrestling?" I said, "Yeah, I'm sitting in the car." He said, "Are you done?" I said, "No, I hadn't went to the ring yet, but I'm not sitting in a dressing room. I can't listen to him. I don't care what happened on Monday night, and I don't want to hear them talking about it while I'm sitting in the dressing room with them.
I understand that.
I mean, it's, you know, you're talking about being blessed. I mean, this is still the only job I've ever had, and I thank the Lord for that every day. But it, I got to tell Michael and Dundee and Ronnie West, you know, I've got 25 years left on the road, I think, but they'd probably be putting circus flyers out instead of... instead of
well, it comes a time when you, you know, oh, that clock will catch you, you know, you start, I don't know if you got any, you know, knee problems, back problems, shoulder problems, hip problems.
Oh, yeah, I've got them all. I've had surgery on my tailbone, my hip. I've had it, my hip dislocated twice, you know, beaten, banged up. I've been in a couple of car wrecks that should have killed me. And, you know, I keep making towns. But, you know, it's I love listening to this show right here every week because it's just the boys talking to the boys. That's something that is that you don't see that anywhere.
All right.
You know, Tom Pritchard was in my town, and I got a good crew of guys because they all respect because I make them and I've educated them. You know, but Tom walked in the door the other day, and I said, "You're dressing right back there beside me." I got to have somebody to talk to while I'm here for the next 3 hours.
Well, see, you're missing your opportunity, Bo. You need to book Honey Boo Boo.
Oh God! don't even get me started on that.
I didn't even know who that was. They told me. Thank God.
Oh man! I mean, it's, we've seen some Honey Boo Boos in the ring over the years. Jared, let me ask you this here. I told Michael I was going to ask you this thing because I talk about in my book about, you know, you had classic wrestling names like Wildfire and Hacksaw and Mad Dog, and you had one that I've always thought it fit you so perfect, but St. Louis was the only place I ever saw where they called you the Georgia Greyhound.
And why they did that, I have no idea.
That's why I was wondering if that was just something the office had came up with or something that you did. Or
I think Bobby Bruns did that when he was announcing.
That was the only place that I ever saw him announce you as that was in St. Louis.
I about blacked out when he did it. I'm going to... that's the only place. St. Louis. No. I think Bobby Bruns did that.
Which you don't have nicknames like that. You don't have brother teams like you and your brother. You don't have...
No.
I mean, it's...
You hardly hate me.
We were just a handful of real brothers.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there was not... I mean, there was 10 million supposed brother teams, but there was, like you said, just a handful of actual blood brothers. So, I grew up here in East Tennessee. I saw the two craziest brothers that ever was in Ron and Don Wright. So,
I'm sure.
You know, but, I mean, it's just it's so, you know, I had two older cousins that they worked for Nick Goulas, Jim Crockett Sr., Zach Murray, and Melvin Johnson. You know, somebody in my family's been involved in wrestling since 1964. And you don't have many of those anymore either.
No.
And my nephew Jake, he just turned 18. He is in his second week in the wrestling business. He's already worked 5 times. I told him, I said, you've had more matches in the first week and a half than most people have in the first year that they work.
That's no joke.
You know, so we have 3 generations of in my family involved, and there's not very many of those left. And, you know, many of the wrestlers had kids, but I guess they watched and saw and said, man, I don't want no part of that. Or a lot of them I've seen.
Jerry Briscoe's son is doing what but then you think a classic wrestler and as good a wrestler as Jerry Briscoe was, you know, and I'm sure his son is a talented worker, but what's he showing anybody? You know, punch, kick, clothesline, punch, kick, clothesline. You know, here his dad was a classic amateur wrestler and a fantastic it could work any style in the profession. And, you know, what are they using this kid as?
I'm surprised he didn't let him get in the business.
Well, it's the same with Steamboat's kid, you know.
Yeah.
And the funny thing about Briscoe's son is he's working for the opposition. He's working for TNA.
Yeah, that's what I didn't understand.
Who is?
Yeah, Wes Briscoe, Jerry Briscoe's son, Wes, is working for TNA.
See, I don't even follow. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I don't follow it either. It's what I see on the internet. Because what Jerry posted on Facebook, congratulations to Wes for winning whatever their gut check, or which I guess was their version of Tough Enough, that Wes won that. And so I was surprised that his son was...
Well, that strange as it can be.
Yeah, that is... Well, let me tell you, there's no reason to be a mole there, because they're not even worth worrying about. They ran Johnson City here about 10 days ago and drew about 150 people.
Who did?
TNA.
You are kidding me.
No, I'm not. There's a video online of the house show they did in Johnson City. It was,
well, I hate to say it, but Dixie Carter's getting what she deserves.
And it's unbelievable. You got all those people there with years and years of experience and knowledge. And I guess they're just collecting a paycheck and going home.
Well, it depends on who you're talking about. Hogan, I wouldn't, you know, his knowledge wouldn't even fill up his own boot.
No.
He never learned anything.
No. Well, I mean, you look in an office, you got Bruce Richard.
Who was running it?
Well, I think that's the whole thing. There's too many Chiefs and no Indians.
Let me tell you something.
When it all boils down to it, it's Hogan and Bischoff.
Let me tell you something. I do not care if it was 1948, 1968, 1998, or 70 when I started. You can only have one man driving that ship.
Yep.
I'm telling you. And
yep.
The worst thing that ever happened is Booker's working. Because
yep.
What's he going to do?
Put himself over.
That's it. It's a simple fix. I could save that woman so much money she'd think she entered Fort Knox.
I mean, it's the whole, but I mean... You were talking about now, about all these towns running, all this stuff running. You know, there's nobody in any of those towns with any knowledge. Because they don't, I mean, the people that do have it, they're not going anywhere near it. I mean, they're not going anywhere near it.
Now, this is what town you said they ran and drew 100 people?
They ran Johnson City, Freedom Hall, the big building here.
They
run here about once a year.
That's it.
They ran Knoxville the next day, and I heard they did about between 400 and 600 there. But here's the thing, too. They give tickets away like crazy on the radio.
I'm sure.
And they had all the direct auto insurance agencies all had stacks and stacks of tickets giving them away, trying to get people in the building.
You kidding me?
No. I know a buddy of mine called me. He said, I got 6 tickets to Freedom Hall. I said, so how'd you get those? He said, I went and paid my car insurance. They give me 6 tickets. So,
6 tickets.
I guess they're just hoping to get people in the building to sell them merchandise.
Yeah, probably.
Let me ask you this. Where's Flair?
I don't know. He would have been one guy that they should have put on that town if he's still working for. I don't even know if he still works for them.
I don't think he does.
I think his contract is up. I think they're waiting out his no compete, and then I think he's already agreed to go back to work for Vince. Because he's been rumored every big pay-per-view they have, everybody speculates that he's going to show up.
And
you know, when they got they'll make him, you know, the most worn-out thing that is going in wrestling anymore. They'll make him the general manager, the commissioner, whatever you want to call it. That's the most worn-out thing, that and the heel announcer. That's two things I wish had never been invented.
the wrestling business. I blame Roddy Piper for the heel announcer thing. Him and Jesse Ventura, they got it over so well. Now everybody thinks, you know, there's got to be a heel announcer. There's got to be an evil general manager, and it's just the most cliche thing in the world.
It's so hokey. It's not even. I don't know.
It's copy. They just copy everything that they've seen before. Everybody's out of ideas, and whatever they see on TNA or Monday Night Raw or the Friday show, or now they got a Wednesday show and all these shows, whatever they see on that TV, they try to take into the local arenas on Saturday and Friday and Saturday night. And I've told them, I said, look, it ain't drawing nothing on a national level, so why do you think it's going to draw here?
They don't get it.
They don't get it. They just want to imitate what they see. They all, you know, and it's there's no individual. Everybody looks the same, and it's not just on TV. I see it every week in towns. You know, you got the muscle bound guys with the tattoos, and they all run and slide underneath the bottom rope, jump on the second rope, put their arms out, and go, look at me. You know, why should anybody cheer them? The match hasn't even started yet, and they haven't did anything for anybody to even care.
That's the biggest response they're going to get all night, though.
Yeah. Some guy told me a few weeks ago, he said, you're stuck in the 80s. I said, no. I said, actually, I settle for the 80s. I said, if it was still me, if I was the ruler of the wrestling business, we'd still be in wool tights and wrestle for an hour and a half. You know, there would be no high spots because, you know, it's working for UFC. They're selling out everywhere they're going. It's the same premise, and they don't get it.
Well, I take that back. The two things that I said were the worst cliches. The invasion angle, that's another horrible
thing. Oh, yeah.
I don't watch TNA, but is this Aces and Eights thing? Isn't it just basically a rerun of the old NWO thing that they beat to death in WCW?
In the 10 or 12 years that they've been running, I've seen their program twice. And one of them I was at. I went with Ricky Morton when they were still doing the weekly pay-per-views in Nashville. I rode down with him on Wednesday. And I thought then, why would anybody pay to see this? The thing that's missing too is there's nobody that's going to catch fire and get the people interested in wrestling again. There's nothing, because the people that are being thrown on national TV, they didn't have years of experience working in territories knowing how to get over. They're being thrown out there and told what to do. And if it doesn't work, then you don't see them again. They go with the next guy. Well, we'll throw him out there.
And look who's telling them what to do, script writers.
Yeah.
You know,
to where when the national TV first hit in Atlanta, or when Vince started putting his show everywhere, you had seasoned veterans that had worked 350 days a year for decades.
Yeah.
You had a crew that could go in any city and everybody knew how to work. They don't have that now, and they will never have that again.
No, they won't. They won't. They won't. They won't. Never.
And the little, you know, people, you talk about the cliches that overrun. Here's the other one that I hear everywhere. The territories are going to come back. No, they're not. No. Never. It'll never happen, ever.
No, it
because
won't happen.
Because plain and simple, if I was to get, say, $1 million behind me and I got TVs all over here, same setup Fuller had with Knoxville, Johnson City, Hazard, Crossville, Chattanooga TV, there's 500 people running in between each one of those cities and in those cities.
Yep.
The only way that it's going to work is I'm going to have to go hire a few hitmen to take care of those guys, and before we get it off the ground, I'll be going to the electric chair.
There you go.
It ain't gonna work. You're right. It's just not.
You know, there are certain towns where people can get a town and they can run it every few weeks or every week, and they can do it there, but they're not going to branch out, and they're going to have their own building to keep anybody else out of it from running. But, and it's the same, okay, you get it going, you got a good crew of guys, but they're going to get stale 6 or 8 months. Where are you going to find the next crew?
It's deeper than people think. You're right. I thought at one time, about 10, 12 years ago, it'll never happen. First of all, nobody would know how to do it.
No.
And know-hows will be gone.
There's no way you can take the average wrestler. I don't care if he's in the WWE. I don't care if he's working at Chatsworth on Saturday night. I don't care if he's in my dressing room. You're not going to take him, and he's not going to work Monday through Friday in a different town every day, do a Saturday morning TV, a Saturday night town, and 2 towns on Sunday. He'll be in the hospital by the time you get to Wednesday.
That's right. It's just like they try to have all these people involved with some booking committee or whatever. When we went to Charlotte, that place was on. I mean, you cannot believe the houses. They ran 3 towns a night, and George Scott was the booker. One person did all that.
Yep.
He had talent, too, now. It takes talent.
And you can't. There's a few diamonds in the rough out there. There's a few guys that get it and they understand it. They've studied it their whole lives, and I feel sorry for them. Kyle Matthews is one that pops in my mind right away. Eric Darkstorm's another one. But they got nowhere to go.
No, they'll never make a living doing it.
I mean, they just, and they've got all the talent in the world. They understand it. They eat it. They live it. They breathe it. They pay the price, just like he's talking about. You know, and I tell them, I look at them, I say, guys, he's gone.
You can't wish it back or dream it back because it ain't coming back.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
You look at somebody like Bull Buchanan, who, you know, granted Bull's been around 20 years now, but think how good he would have been in, say, had he broke in 1972. There's not a territory in the world that he couldn't have been a star in.
Exactly.
Oh, yeah. Just his look. He could drew money just the way he looks.
Yep. He's still working?
He's still working. I don't think a whole lot, but I see his name, you know, at different times pop up. But, I mean, the other thing that you don't see anymore, there's no baby faces. There sure ain't no white meat baby faces. Everybody thinks they got to be cool and cocky, and I don't want to kill my character. You don't have a character. You know, you're supposed to be a wrestler.
So the whole thing's screwed up, man. It's so screwed up.
It's unbelievable.
I'm about getting OJ talking about all this. Alka-Seltzer or something.
You burn up the batteries in your knee massager.
we have our memories though. Yep. You know, somebody asked me, and this is in the book too. They asked me. They said, you know, when you die and go to heaven, who do you want to wrestle in heaven? I said, I don't want to wrestle anybody. I want to be sitting with my dad and my uncle in the crowd, just like I was as a kid, watching the magic show. Because the magic show's gone.
It's just gone.
I mean,
the magic show.
We all grew up fans. I mean, we were excited to go. We were excited. If they just said they was going to set the ring up down the street, you could just come look at the ring, we all would have went.
Let me tell you something. In my heyday, I was still the biggest fan there. I was a fan still.
No, and being a fan, also led to the respect that we had for everybody that came before us.
That's it.
And that's missing too.
That's gone.
You know, the biggest thing that makes up the all kinds you see now, disrespectful punks. I don't know how many times I hear them go, well, he's just an old man, or he was just a job guy, or he was just this or that. I said, hey, he bought four homes in Riceland. How many did you buy?
Yeah.
And made a living doing it.
I mean, we need ugly, bald-headed men and masked men and little weasley managers. All that's gone. You know, that was part of the magic that made us all want to be a part of it.
Back to what Jerry was talking about, the Crockett territory. When Jerry was there, and even the years prior, look at the guys you had opening the card: Abe Jacobs, Jim Grabmeier. These were veteran guys who worked on top back in their day. But you know, people that they finally started catching Crockett whenever cable TV come along. Well, those just got job guys. Yeah. He's just a loser. You know, they look at the same thing at the Gulf Coast territory. All they see is the tapes that float around of the last couple of years that existed. Dick Dunn, he never won a match. Greg Peterson, he was a short, fat guy. Yeah, short, fat guy that could stretch you from here to Georgia.
Greg Peterson was a hot baby face in Kingsport. He was Whitey Caldwell's partner here for a few different runs. He had very successful runs here for Mickey Barnes.
Yep.
And the first time I'd ever saw him was, I'd seen his picture in the old newspaper clippings, but the first time I ever saw him was when I got a hold of those Gulf Coast tapes.
Well, you should have had the pleasure of working with him.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it when I worked with him.
There's another thing we used to sit in the dressing room and talk about football just like we were a few minutes ago, or just what's going on in the world or the wrestler's kids or whatever else. Now, you better be there at 4 o'clock because they're going to start rehearsing about 5. And they couldn't come out from a different side of the building and work with Greg Peterson and just go in the ring and listen to him.
No.
They can't do that now.
And yeah, I was going to say, back in our day, the wrestling was the last thing in the world we talked about.
That's
a card game going on or something.
Yeah, or somebody. It's just the all kinds that it takes to make up, or we've lost them.
Now, Jerry, can you imagine this? You're brand new. Going to work for, say, Ole Anderson as a booker, and he tells you, okay, you're working with this guy, and he, so-and-so's going over, you got 12 minutes, which was basically all we were ever told. You guys got 12 minutes, he's going
right
over. Can you see standing in front of him and say, well, can we rehearse?
He'd go to the car and get a gun.
Oh, God. Yeah, and he from time to time when I run different buildings, I will break the guys up. I make them go different, and some of them just absolutely freak out. I mean, they lose their minds.
Well, see,
what do you mean?
I always took pride in thinking and believing I could work with anybody. I'd get on a plane and fly to Detroit and get off and go in the dressing room, never seen the guy, you're working with so-and-so. I'm like, okay, what are we doing? That's all I need to know,
Yeah.
I always took pride in that. Well, these guys, I know what you're talking about. When I was promoting, they'd get up there, and I thought there's in some kind of stage play or something. I'm like, what in the world? I said, well,
have they gotten one of Eddie Graham's 2-hour fetish?
Oh, my God. God. But see, that's what we're talking about. Oh, that's lost, man. That's the same thing as Greek.
Yeah. Here's another one that I talk about in the book about seeing. When is the last time you've seen a big, ugly, nasty-looking guy? I mean, there's no Joe LeDucs, there's no Brooke Bernards, there's nobody like that anywhere.
No, no.
I see them all the time. They're usually in the audience.
Yeah. But, I mean, you just think about it. You see, they were intimidating.
Sure
they had
they
a
were.
Presence. They had a presence about them, you know. And people just, I mean, they got up and got out of their way when they went to the ring. They moved.
Yeah.
And if they came out of the ring on their side, they got up and moved in fear that he was coming across that rail. And
well,
there's nobody like that. Mongo and Stomper. I watched him all my life. And then, you know, I'm 15 years old and I'm around him. I'm reffing matches with him. And I was terrified of him as a kid. Then I got in the wrestling business and I was even more afraid of him. Because I saw firsthand how he handled a few people. You know, and there's nobody like that anymore.
No, it's just lost. I mean, it's just a thing that's something that if you were fortunate enough to have done it, this, like you said, it's just a memory. It's something that you knew and did, and that's, you can't even watch it anymore. I mean, it's just, it's sad.
No, it's just, we have our memories. I mean, there's, the other thing was you would hear about guys and know the reputation before they ever got there. You know, they throw people on TV now, and you don't know who they are when you see them, and you don't know who they are when they disappear.
No.
I mean, you think about how much it was put into getting somebody over before they ever got to a place.
Oh, absolutely.
It wasn't just, hey, here's this. And they don't do that with anybody anymore. I don't know if they don't want to spend the money or what it is.
I'm sure both of you experienced this too. I remember being a fan and, you know, reading the magazine because I couldn't wait for the magazines to hit the newsstands. I would get three or four of them or all of, you know, whichever ones that they had. You're reading about guys like Bobo Brazil and then, you know, hearing he's coming to Mobile, you know, and that thrill and Andre the Giant the first time he came to Mobile and stuff like that. It's just, it was amazing, you know, because I was one of the few people that knew who these people were, that were there.
They had a buzz about them, especially Andre when he was coming.
Yeah.
I mean, and I'm just watching right here on these DVDs he brought me here was when Andre came to Southeastern for Fuller. He was going to be Bob Armstrong's partner. They didn't even. The only thing they showed of Andre was that character drawing of him standing over the city.
Yep.
No video, no pictures. They just showed that and had Bullet do the interview about him being 7'5" and 450 pounds, and people, they got excited about it. People were they were excited. You know, as kids, we went to the matches excited. Even when I was in the business, I would get there early. I was excited. I still like to watch the people. In Mount Carmel, I can sit up the hallway with the lights off, and I can see the people in line to come in, but they can't see me. And I like to watch because I can judge off of what they're talking about. I can hear them and see them. They're excited at times. You know this is going to be a good day.
Yep.
But there's not much to be excited about anymore.
That's true. That is true.
I mean, they don't, and it's from a national level to a local level. Nothing is done to make anybody get excited about anybody coming. You know, because most of them
still being active in the business. Well, you see it more than Jerry and I do. How do you think fans say you ran? Well, your promotion is a little bit different, but say one of the promotions that you work for over North Carolina, and they had two, as you called them, white meat baby faces go out in the opening match and work a clean, scientific 15-minute Broadway. Do you think the fans would even get into it?
If they know how to do it. So that's your problem there.
Well, yeah, that's
too many problems.
You know, most of them, if you tell them to go Broadway, they're going to go, what's that?
That's a fact.
Nobody speaks wrestler anymore.
Yeah.
You know, That's why I call Bobby Simmons a couple times a week. They just talk to me. You know, just let me hear something. That's why Tom Pritchard and I talk to each other every day. We're the only ones that relate to each other that, you know, live here. I mean, it's sad. And, I mean, there's still some of the boys left that live around here. But, I mean, they don't come because of the way they've been treated other places. Mm-hmm. Ronnie Garvin gave Misty and I in July, he stayed. Two compliments. One was said to us when he told us, he said, this is ran like it used to be ran. He enjoyed it. He sit there and watched and everything. The other thing was, the reason I knew he was speaking the truth, he stayed for almost an hour after the matches were over and watched us do the interviews for the TV and just watched and told a few guys a few pointers. He was excited about it. He told us, most places I go, I don't even go in the dressing room. He said, I get my money, I sit at the table, and I go to the ring from the table. You know, yeah. But he came over to me, we're sitting in the dressing room, and he come over and he says, get up. And I said, yeah. I said, what? He said, get up. So I stood up, he said, lock up with me. So we lock up, we put yourself in the headlock. I stand still for 5 minutes while he has a match with me just standing there.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he was, we all love the business. We all want to see something. We want that little piece of what it used to be. You know, that's why we go to Mobile. That's why we go to Bobby's church this week. That's, you know, when we bring them in July, that's why they have fun. You know, but 99.999% of everywhere else, they don't. Because nobody even worries. Nobody bothers. If yeah. you're sitting there, if you're having a match, and Ronnie Garvin is sitting there at the table, and this did happen at my place, but at other places, most people will not go to him and go, hey, did you watch? What can I work on? And I had several of my young guys go to him and ask him, and he talked to them. But most places, they don't want to hear what he's got to say. He doesn't matter to them. He never did a moonsault. You know. But he
so
sold out
to
knock
your brains out.
He sure could, he sold out the Knoxville Coliseum every Friday night for I don't know how many years, and the Charlotte Coliseum, and the Omni, and everywhere else.
Yeah, but all of them, they're all internet smart, so all they know is he shouldn't have been the NWA champion. They should have given him, let Flair have 14 more runs instead of him.
Oh,
yeah. That's the thing, you know. I'll give the devil his due. Ric Flair in his prime was a tremendous performer. But to me, his prime ended in around 1986. You know, but these people who think that you know, wrestling was invented by him and Hogan, I just don't understand it.
I don't understand it either.
I mean, and the Road Warriors, the love that these people give the Road Warriors, and Jerry knows from working with them, you know, they were the worst thing that ever happened to the wrestling business, besides Hogan, in my opinion.
And I love Mike. I really don't know Joe that well, but I knew Mike because he was in Tennessee a few times when I was there. But they killed the pile driver. They killed every finish. You know, the pile driver was death in Tennessee for 50 years. They piledrive Hawk, and he stood right back up. You know, it was something new. They caught fire, and they took off. And they did well for themselves. But, yeah, they changed it. And you're talking about Flair there in 86. Well, you look who he had to work with from that point on. He had Nikita, Luger, and Sting. He wasn't wrestling Harley Race every night again. He wasn't wrestling with Paul Jones, or the list could go on and on and on.
That's true. But
he perfected the match that was safe for him. He didn't care if he bought
the spots that people wanted to see. You know, everyone wanted to see that stupid nosedive that he did, and that flop over into the ring post. As many times as he did it, and for as many years as he did it, he still never did it as good as Ray Stevens.
No.
And I see people, you know, on the internet now, they see matches. You know, Ray Stevens was so overrated. This guy was horrible. It's like, you don't even deserve to be, call yourself a wrestling.
Oh. Jerry, let me ask you this, Jerry. Who, the first time you worked with somebody, who was you the most excited about to get to work with?
That's a good question.
Moose Cholock.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so, that's probably what's wrong with my knees today. I guess it would have been when I worked with Briscoe for the first time, when he was a world champion. That was a thrill to me. Absolute thrill.
He's another one. Everybody gives Ricky Steamboat the credit for the arm drag. Briscoe had that arm drag 15 years before Ricky Steamboat was ever on the scene. You know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I'm going to tell you something. If you ever seen tapes of him and Funk.
I saw him as a kid live in Kingsport a couple times.
There's no critic on earth could pick that match up, any of their matches apart.
No. There's a documentary that's out right now that Michael Elliott did on the history of the NWA world title. And I recommend anybody that was a wrestling fan, go get this thing, because he goes through all the world champions up until it became WCW. And they talk about, and they show clips of Briscoe and Dory Jr. And I'm on the documentary, and I said that too, because there's a few of them on there that said, well, Dory was kind of boring. I said, no. You've watched Dory Jr. and Jack Briscoe. There's not a second of anything that they do that is boring.
No.
The stories that they could tell, and to go an hour every night. In some places, they went 90 minutes.
Yeah, to me, Dory Jr. was the greatest world champion ever.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. And I worked with Harley. I worked with Jack. I worked with Flair.
I think Dory was able to adapt and work. His match with so many different people. That's what made him so good.
Yeah, he was a mixture, too, of the wrestler, the fighter. He could do the high speed. He could do it all.
Yeah.
You know. And, I mean, there'll never be another one. There'll never be anything ever that will ever touch their matches ever again. People can talk about these WrestleMania moments, and they can talk about pay-per-views, and they can talk about whatever. But I've got an hour Broadway that they did in Miami on tape, and I watch it about four times a year. Nothing will ever touch that match that they – and they had that in every city they went to.
Yep, I've got an hour Broadway between the two of them from Japan. You know, I don't even, you know, I just turned the commentary down because I don't understand what the guy's saying, and I just watch it in silence. And it's that good. You can tell everything. You can tell the story that they're telling just by watching it. You know, there's certain matches that I have on disc that I go back and visit. The Pat O'Connor Buddy Rogers match is one of them.
And I think that's one of the greatest matches. That match right there holds up throughout the ages. It's as good now as it was then and in a year in between, and you can go 200 years in the future and it'll be just as good.
Another one, and Jerry kids about working with him all the time, but I think Jerry worked with him at the tail end of his career. And he never was a great worker, even though he had a legitimate background, but Moose Cholock. I've got a match with Moose Cholock and Leaping Larry Shane that is the perfect big man, little man match.
Is that from the Marigold Theater in Chicago?
Yes.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yes. Have you ever seen that, Jerry? I think we may have lost Jerry.
He had to go rub his knees. He's so upset.
Probably so.
No, that is it. I've seen that. It's an art form. There's another one. When is the last time you seen a big Alaskan or a Moose Cholock or somebody like that? Klondike Bill. Those were characters that caught people's imaginations. People, they knew only what they were allowed to see of them on TV, so their minds wondered about them. You know, how did they grow up on the farm, or how did they do this or that? How did they learn to wrestle? There was that mystique and that secret to them. It's long gone.
Yeah.
But we have memories. you know, whether it's our time in the ring or just fan. And that's why I like going, even in my books, I like sharing stuff as a kid, being excited, watching the stuff I saw. I talk about Bob Eaton in this book and how he came here in 1980, and I knew as a kid seeing him, man, there's something special about this guy. And then seeing him years later when he, you know, I don't think he ever had a bad match with anybody. And he worked with some people that that most people would have had bad matches with. But
yeah,
Bobby was that good.
Bobby was, he was also the exact opposite of what everybody thinks a great wrestler is. He was not muscle bound. He didn't have a great physique. He could because I've heard him early in his career cut promos.
Yeah.
For the most part, he never talked on the microphone. But there again, he never had a bad match.
And he just like us grew up loving the business, and he still loves it now as much as he did when he was 10 years old. He still loves going to the matches. But he's one of few and far between that's out there now. But he's another one that every young guy in any dressing room in America should pull a chair up beside him and talk to him. And most of them don't bother. You know, they remember him from his last days in WCW. That's what they look at him as.
I mean, there are so many guys that had they not, you know, the current crop of people been brainwashed into thinking that they have to do what they see on TV on Monday or Tuesday or whenever, whatever nights it runs now. You know, there are so many guys, Jerry, Les Thatcher, hell, Frankie Kane, people like this that are still alive. You know, this is the thing that bothers me about Mobile. We Bobby and I have talked about this before. Here are these young guys, you know, that are each year they're starting to outnumber the veterans there.
Yeah.
They all pile over in the corner with their friends. They don't take the opportunity to go talk to a Danny Hodge. I heard one time say, "Who in the world is Danny Hodge? What'd he ever do?" I said, somebody ought to just take you out right now and put you out of this building, and you not even be allowed to even think about this reunion again, much less attend it. But, you know, stuff like that.
Les is a perfect example of a guy not only that can give you a lot of advice on working in the ring, he also can teach you how to do an interview. He can teach you how to put a TV together. He can teach you how to produce a TV. He can teach you how to promote a town. He can do. He's did every job in our business that has ever been done.
And it's not just the wrestlers either. You find a guy like Charlie Smith, who's booked towns, who's run towns, you know, who's come up with finishes. You know, Charlie Smith has probably forgotten more finishes than most of the rest of us have ever even seen.
Yeah. Yeah,
but nobody bothers to ask. You know, that's what makes me so sick. There's a million guys out there still alive that still have all this knowledge. But I'd rather kill myself jumping through a chair or through a wooden table, you know, and barbed wire caught on fire, so the fans will chant at me, and I'll make my $10, or I'll do it for free. I'll pay you to let me do it.
Most of them are doing it for free or paying to wrestle.
Yep.
You know, and Mobile is so full of so much knowledge, and every guy in there, like Bill Bowman and Joe Turner, worked here. That's why I love talking to them coming when they came to Johnson City. You know, they have stories of coming up here because they're here in my home area. They work this territory. I love listening to that. You know, Charlie Smith tell me about coming up here in the 60s and working for Kazana. I love it. But you look at all them other young guys there, they all live in a city that somebody in that building worked in regular.
Yep.
And none of them care to find out. You know, they just want to see who they can come over there and get an autograph from. Or I don't even know why they come, some of them. Load their pockets up when they leave, I guess, to see how much they can take with them. But, I mean, it's, and And it's such a shame. But, I mean, it's everywhere. But, I mean, you look at all the people in one room that work so many places. Same thing Saturday. I mean, I don't know who all is going to be there, but I know there's going to be a lot of people that worked everywhere.
Yep.
And they'll come there, but they won't come to a wrestle match.
No.
You know, they worked their whole lives. They worked their whole lives in this business, giving their bodies and their blood and everything else they could give to it. And but the business doesn't remember them or repay them. It's an unforgiving business. We know that when we get into it. We realize real fast there's very few real friends.
Oh, yeah.
When you do find some, you're going to stick with them for life. You know, but we also realized or thought as young men that this is going to be here forever. This is it's going to take care of us.
Yep.
We always have the matches to go to where we fit in and we feel a part of it. What if you take anybody from the reunions and take them to the average independent wrestling show? There is nothing there other than maybe the ring set up and they're selling popcorn that they can relate to.
Exactly.
I mean, that is the only thing that is still the same. And Charlie Smith's over the corner hawking his gimmicks. So,
that's eternal.
I told Misty, I saw a picture from Blue Ridge, and Charlie had a table set up. I said, we're going to have to get there before he does this week. We're going to have to get over there by the door, get set up before they put their wallets back in their pockets. So, but, I mean, there's not much semblance. I mean, you and I will sit and watch our youth on DVD and videotapes all day long, or YouTube.
Yeah.
And we see things. I put this one of these DVDs in, and as soon as it came on, I looked, I said, man, I remember this like it was yesterday. And I was 10 years old when it happened, and I was sitting there watching, and I was just excited to watching it, you know, 24 years later than I was watching it when it happened the first time.
Exactly.
Because I'm a fan of that. I'm not a fan of, you know, that's why I wonder if I would be a fan. My nephew Jacob, he just started wrestling, and he's not a fan of what is on television now. He'll watch it a little bit. But he's more of a fan where he will sit and watch Pat O'Connor and Buddy Rogers. Because he's grew up all of his life around me, and he's been educated to, this is what it used to be like. This is what it should still be like. You know, I tell him, I say, you're way too bitter to be 18 years old. You know, but he started making towns when he was about 6 months old. He's been in the ring since he was 15. So, I mean, he ref for 3 years before we'd start letting him wrestle. But, I mean, he sees just in his lifetime of growing up of how it's changed and how different it is. And I can't imagine. I mean, I look at guys like Bullet Bob and Handsome Jimmy. They got 50, less stature, they got 50 years in the changes that they have seen in their years in the ring and being involved in wrestling. There's no semblance of anything that they started out loving.
No, not at all. Not at all. I mean, just the whole thing of back when we were talking about now anybody can, you know, buy a ring and all that stuff. I mean, when we were kids watching it and being fans, we had no clue as to couldn't even imagine being able to buy your own ring.
No.
And I've said this before, you know, I had to beg to have somebody even show me a K&H catalog back in the day.
I started reffing when I was 15 years old. I guess I wore amateur wrestling shoes to ref. I guess I was about 16, and I asked Rick Connors. I said, where can I get a wrestling boots? And he said, you don't need them. I said, yeah. He said, no, you don't need them. I'll tell you when you can buy them, and I'll tell you where to get them.
Exactly.
And it was that was the end of the conversation.
Yeah.
But, you know, you talk to somebody like that now, oh, he's mean, he's bitter. You know,
I'll,
don't go around him. You tell somebody what you think of their match, you know.
Or the worst thing, he's jealous.
I hear that,
yeah,
too.
I'm jealous, all right, because I never had to jump through barbed wire and light bulbs in front of 12 people.
Somebody just did an interview with Hillbilly Jim, and I saw a clip of it on Facebook the other day, but he had one of the greatest quotes ever. He said, it's the only way you can entertain people is by diving off the top of the building into a teacup, you're in the wrong business. And he said, if you continuously are getting hurt, you're doing something wrong.
Yep.
You know, we all have injuries. They're going to come, but not every day.
No.
And that's what I said earlier. There's no way they could ever go wrestle 9 times in a week. You know, some of them may be able to do it 9 times in a month. Not many, but some of them.
4 times in a day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's...
I did that many times, 4 times in a day.
Misty does those... they do those all-girl shows, and they do the DVDs. Well, they only shoot, like, you know, quarterly. So they'll take... I don't know how many DVDs in a day that they do, because, I mean, it's just match after match after match. She's went down there to Memphis and had as many as 9-10 matches in a day.
Hmm.
And I tell her, I don't know how you do it, because there's nobody in there. It's just the video production people and the people running it and putting it together. You know, you're not feeding off of the people. I mean, it's hard to get your adrenaline running, and you're just taking a beating in front of a camera and production people. So... I don't know how them girls do it, other than the fact they get paid per match very well. So that
might have something to do with it.
Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. So,
well, Bob, I'm going to wind down since we lost Jerry, and give your book one more plug, and appreciate you being
on. Anytime, it'll be coming out very shortly, just a few days. KingofKingsport.com, all one word, KingofKingsport.com. Check it out. My first book's still for sale. Go on the website. It's on the right-hand side. You can click on it there with PayPal, and I will ship them out first of the week because I just got a new order coming in, so we'll be ready to go. And also have some DVDs from our promotion, Southern States Wrestling. They're on the left-hand side of KingofKingsport.com. If you want to check those out, they're ready to ship at all times. So, and when I see you Saturday, Michael, are you going to do your Gear Jammer dance?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm working on trying to bring an elephant with me, but not going to find a lonely one yet. So.
Well, if Ronnie West comes, you're bringing the clown with you.
He says he's coming. I don't know.
I hope he does.
I do, too. I didn't get a chance to catch up with him before the end of the season, and just want to check on him, make sure he's doing okay.
Yeah. Well, I thank you for having me on. Like I said, KingofKingsport.com. I'm always selling stuff on there, so you can check it every day and there's something new. I'm like Charlie Smith.
Let's hope not.
Well,
anyway, thank you again, Bo, and I will see you on Saturday. And thanks for listening, buddy, Jerry and Bobby. I hope Bobby's not – I hadn't seen the Saints-Falcons score, so I don't know if he's happy or sad.
I haven't either.
We'll all be here next week, and we'll do this one more time. Thanks again, Bo.
All right, thank you, Michael. See you Saturday, bud.
Good night. All right, bye-bye.